Experienced executives know they can't keep reporting to the same contacts when something goes wrong. They also never lose sight of the fact that most government actions originate with low or mid-level employees. Tim Sullivan is a partner at the law firm Thompson Coburn. He's author of the new blog, A Government Contractor's Ten Commandments. And today he tackles his third commandment, thou shalt start as low as possible, not at the top of the ladder.
It might work in the short term. You might get exactly what you want if you do that. But the long-term consequences of doing that are what should be of concern to someone. And anybody who's been here a while realizes that the political appointees, the elected officials, they come and go. But there are people who start at age 22 working for the federal government in one of the agencies, and they retire at age 55 or 60, and they've been there the whole time. And they've seen many administrations and many leaders come and go, and they remember who treated them right and who treated them wrong and who made them mad and who was good to work with. And those are the people you need to be worried about here, because they are there day in and day out. And that is why you don't want to do anything to insult them or make them angry.
Why do so many companies feel that they need to talk to their member of Congress, though, or somebody on Capitol Hill?
Well, it's just the American belief that that man or woman that has been elected in, from your district is your person in Washington, and that they'll be delighted to help everybody. And in some cases, they are delighted. If your case is, even if you're a one-person company, if your case is especially egregious and it makes for a good headline on a Saturday morning, they'll come to your aid. But usually, it's tough to get their attention in a meaningful way. They'll pay you lip service. You'll meet with a low-level staffer or an intern who will sit down with you and listen to your concerns and your complaints, and he or she will draft a letter that the congressman or the senator will send over to the agency. And a couple of months later, there'll be a response from the agency saying, no, they're wrong, we didn't do it. And they'll simply send it back to you and saying, I hope this helps, good luck. So it really is, unless you are someone who is responsible for thousands of jobs in your particular district or state, the ability to get effective assistance from your congressman or your senator is very limited.
And besides, it's not really kosher, right, for a member of Congress to try to direct an agency to direct a contract one way or the other.
Well, no, they wouldn't do that. Most of them are too smart to do that. But they'll certainly ask them just the typical pitch, Tom, is just give ABC Company a fair shake and a fair look. That's all I'm asking for. I wouldn't ask for anything more than that. And the agency is supposed to do that anyway. And that's how they feel when they get those responses. But that's what will happen in most cases. Most congressmen are not. There have been some, as you know, over the years who have told agencies this is what's going to happen or we're going to cut your funding. And there's a lot of pressure that can go on. One of the things that I'm no lobbyist, but I certainly know that when you are looking at members of Congress, if a man or a woman is on the right committee, then the agencies listen to them a little more carefully. If that committee controls their funding or their programs, they're likely to have more sway with an agency. So it's something you have to keep in mind. But in general, it's not an effective route, and agencies and the federal employees don't really appreciate getting what we call congressionals, these congressional inquiries where they have to drop everything and spend the next day or two responding to a pretty usually much ado about nothing complaint.
All right. You write that smart executives know that, as a general rule, the best way to approach a problem with the federal government is to start at the lowest rung possible. Now, you say if you have a problem with the government, is that if you're trying to also have them learn about your product or service, or simply if you just have a problem?
It depends on what the issue is, Tom. It's one thing to market your products or services, and there are ways to do that. You and I have talked about them, the expos, the small business offices, the requests for information, and things like that. But the old saying is the only thing worse than not having a government contract is having one. And what that means is that this is a difficult customer. It's a demanding customer. And sometimes these demands can go way beyond what you ever expected. And remember, Tom, the contracting officer, who in the way we look at things is responsible for managing these contracts in the sense that they are the only people who can commit the government, they could be 5 floors away from the program people, 5 miles away from the program people, or across the country or the world from the program people. So things will happen in a government contract that he or she will not be aware of unless the contractor brings it to his or her attention. And so if there's a problem that develops, you should start with the contracting officer. And if that doesn't work, maybe then you give them every chance to resolve this in a good faith way. Then you go maybe to the director of contracts. If that doesn't work, maybe you file a claim or a request for an equitable adjustment, which gets the legal people involved. And ultimately, if you get into litigation, a judge. You can even go higher within the agency before resorting to filing a claim to see if maybe a colonel or a general will help you, or a GS-16. But you want to do it one step at a time and resolve things as low as possible whenever you can.
We're speaking with Tim Sullivan, a partner at Thompson Coburn and author of 10 Commandments for Federal Contractors. And concerning the contracting staff, who can influence or change things that a contracting staff is doing other than the contracting hierarchy?
Remember, the contracting hierarchy is there to serve the program people. That's their customer. And so they listen very hard to what the customer says and what the customer wants. And very many times in my career, and even when I was a contracting officer a million years ago, I understood that the smartest thing for companies to do was actually convince the program people of the need for something to be done and have the program people pitch the contracting officer on it. Because as long as the money's there, most contracting officers aren't going to get out of sorts because of a request for a slight change here or a slight change there, as long as it's well within the scope of the contract.
All right. So are there any exceptions? I mean, is there ever a situation when you say, you know what, this is so egregious, I've got to go to the program manager or that general or colonel?
You basically always want to start with the contracting officer. And if that doesn't work for whatever reason, I've just been through one where we filed a request for an equitable adjustment, waited 60 days, not a peep in response. We converted it to a claim, waited 60 days, not a peep in response. Then when we filed at the Board of Contract Appeals, we heard from the lawyers, finally. So it's just a matter of the particular situation, and you have to gauge it piece by piece or situation by situation to decide when it's appropriate to go over someone's head. And the reason I'm most concerned about that, when I was in high school and college, we used to hear about this concept of saving face when you talk about different cultures where saving face was so important. But it wasn't a big thing in America. We were taught in the classroom. But that's just bunk. I've been in this business since the early 70s, and saving face is a very big thing. You don't want to do anything that's going to embarrass your customer in any way, making him or her feel like they're useless and meaningless, going over the head, going around them without giving them a good faith opportunity to resolve the problem on their own.
And so that indicates that the conversation should stick to the facts of the issue and not get personal.
Oh, big time. You never want to get personal. When you start to get personal with someone in the government, there's a risk that they're going to drop their institutional goals and nail you personally. And they have so much power in terms of the ability to terminate a contract or not exercise an option that your ability to do anything about that could take years, if ever. And meanwhile, they'll have the satisfaction of knowing you've had to hire lawyers and pay them and they've given you a good whack and you can't touch them.
And I suppose it's also true that there are people that might be low level that you might instinctively say, well, I don't need to deal with them. But if they've been there a long time, they may know the plumbing. They may have a lot of institutional, non-official influence that belies their title.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's another reason why you really want to get to know your customer and not just deal with them by email and on the phone. You want to meet them personally and get a feel for exactly who they are and what they're like. That's very important in terms of successful customer relationships.